systems are offline.
Eve Radio Live, powered by TCS Wi-Fi.
Just gone to 3 o'clock on E-Radio on a Thursday afternoon, and by now, well, maybe not now, but one day you will know that it means that it's time for Tech Thursday. And as always, joined by my guest, Kane. Hello, Kane. How are you?
Hey, Ian. Thanks so much for having me. I am really, really good. How about you?
I'm good, man, and it's good to hear you. And yes, you coming to us today via Zoom, and you are my very first Zoom call. I've never been Zoomed before. Can you believe it?
Yeah, Dad, we're breaking boundaries here. There is no glass ceiling.
Yes, I'm just so glad the camera's not on, because I really don't feel like being watched right now. So it's just the audio. It is just the audio on Zoom, and it is actually quite nice. You know, everybody's been Zooming. I think Zoom kind of really got a kickstart with the pandemic, because that's how board meetings are to this day. That's how they're happening, right? And you yourself, you're also working a lot with Zoom, Kane.
Yeah, we used Zoom a lot before even the starting point of the pandemic, you know, 2017, 2018,
wow,
even 2019. So it was so strange to actually, during the pandemic, hear someone like my mom be like, yeah, I'm going into a Zoom call. You know, I was like, what? You know, that's so strange. I've never even heard anyone say that. But now it's a regular thing.
Can I be honest?
Go for it.
I've never used Zoom before, as I said, and it's the reason is also because I didn't know about Zoom before the coronavirus. I thought it came with the virus, that like people invented it now for meetings to happen. I didn't know there was a Zoom pre-2020. That's what I'm saying. You obviously knew.
You thought that someone clever woke up and was like, time to make some money.
Yeah, I thought, you know, oh, the pandemic is here. People are tired of using all the other things, Google Hangout and whatever. Let's just, I don't even know if Google Hangout still exists. Let's just try Zoom, and let's make a Zoom. And then they made a Zoom. But you say you started using it 2017 already. That's like 4 years ago. So obviously it's not a new kid on the block.
There were other ones as well. There was... I think there were others like Google Hangouts, and there was there were quite a few that came out, but a lot of them have kind of got filtered out. There were a lot more, and it used to be such an interesting thing, because you know, you would get a client from the EU region, and he would be using this platform, but then you would go to the Asian region and someone else would be using something else. So every day you're finding these new and interesting conferencing apps, and it was just so interesting that Zoom was the one that did almost the best. We used lots of different ones.
And I mean, like right now we're using it for voice calling purposes, because you know, it's not just a video thing, because I know somebody in Dubai, and we need to have a meeting soon. And she said to me, and I actually didn't know, that you cannot use WhatsApp video call or WhatsApp voice call in Dubai. Did you know that?
I did not even know that at all. I wonder why it's prohibited.
It's blocked. It's blocked. You can't. She can Zoom. Apparently, you can still Zoom, but you can't. I think you also can't Facebook call, Facebook video call. WhatsApp's a big no-no, that side. Even Telegram, she said. You cannot use those. They're blocked in the country by the providers in Dubai.
Of course, because the providers are making money from device to device calls over the mobile network rather than over the internet. That's so interesting.
Exactly. Well, just before we get started with today's show, and we've got, as always, a range of topics to cover, we look at a roundup of the entire week's tech news. Unless something major happens tomorrow, then we'll obviously only talk about it next week. But this episode is brought to you by the USB Pet Rock. The USB Pet Rock plugs into your computer and it does absolutely nothing.
What an effective device. I mean, have you ever heard of something so unique?
Yes, apparently the makers claim it's good for entertainment, because you can make up stories when people ask you, why did you plug a pet rock into your computer? However, it's just a complete waste of money.
You've revolutionized my whole life.
I still want it. I mean, just look, imagine the expression on people's faces when they see this rock plugged into your computer. And the stories you can make up, you know? I'm just downloading... What can you say you download from a rock?
Google Rock. It's Google Rock. It saves something. I don't know what.
Yes. Yeah, just say it's the new Google Rock. It actually sounds like a real thing. And it's got like songs loaded onto it. Rock music. There we go. Rock music.
Dwayne The Rock Johnson's face just on the front. Yes. The whole combo.
Yes. So get your USB pet rock. That's what you should do, apparently.
Speaking of fancy tech, did you know Elon Musk has given a $100 million donation to XPRIZE
for
a technology that reduces carbon dioxide emissions?
When did that happen? This week as well?
Yeah, it was recently. It's for, XPRIZE will only open on Earth Day, the 22nd of April. But, I mean, it's the largest XPRIZE in history, and it will continue all through 2025. And the first prize is basically $50 million. The second prize is $20 million. And the third prize is $10 million. But it gets more interesting because, you know, obviously the goal is to try and tackle one of the biggest threats facing humanity, which is climate change. So they're looking for someone who can scale technology up to gigaton levels. So your technology, whatever you submit, has to be of such a standard that they can scale it up to benchmark, which the benchmark refers to a billion metric tons worth of carbon dioxide. So this is very big industrial scale. That's mad, right?
Yo.
Can you believe it? And 25 groups of students will basically be given $1 million to go and put their technology or idea into motion and test it out, and obviously the best performing groups will then go ahead and win the big prizes, and it will absolutely revolutionize the industrialization era. I mean, it's going to be crazy.
This guy's just doing amazing things. I actually spoke to my brother earlier this week, and we were talking about, you know, what it would be like to meet Elon Musk. Would you like to meet Elon Musk, Kane, and what would you say to him?
Damn, what a question. I mean, I at this point, if I just have to meet Elon Musk, the first thing I'd say is, I'm sorry, I'm unprepared, but I have one question, and that question is, you know, what should I put my time and my energy into, because that guy's always had a way of getting involved in things before we saw how they would revolutionize or disrupt the current economy or marketplace. And we're looking at things like PayPal revolutionizing the banking economy, Tesla revolutionizing alternative means of energy to power your car. You're talking the Neuralink, which is the brain to the human brain to PC interface. And then you've got the Wi-Fi network that he's also launching, Starlink satellites, which is revolutionizing the internet and satellite infrastructure to deliver service. So this guy's always at the forefront of new technologies. I would want to know what he's looking at now.
Yeah, I wonder what he's like as a person, you know, because he's so intelligent and his way of thinking is just so unique and so different. It would be hard to kind of, I don't even think it is possible to get on his level, but it would be hard, you know. You wouldn't really know where to start with conversations. I think for me, it will just be safe to just pass out, you know, when I meet him.
Make like a possum and act dead.
Yes, I'll just roll over and play dead. Yeah, I think that's a safer option. But now that you mentioned his satellite, what's it called? The Starlink high speed, low latency satellite broadband service. Apparently, Starlink is targeting coverage in South Africa, like full coverage, next year, 2022, with availability being limited. They're looking at more like the remote locations, but orders will be fulfilled on a first-come, first-served basis. You also need to put down a deposit of, now, when they said a deposit, I was like, what, your house price? But no, 1,500 Rand. That's not too bad. 1,500 rand deposit to.
I would pay that.
Yeah, and then you've got Starlink high speed, low latency satellite broadband service. Now I don't know what's the difference between that and normal internet. Can I go to space using the internet or what?
I think that's a very good question. And traditionally, we have had satellite internet before. And that's where, you know, you have a dish or some sort of device on in your house or on top of your house that transmits a signal to a satellite. And then that's how you're basically achieving communication to a ground data center. And I think Starlink is doing something very similar. But there's also a lot of network infrastructure, which is in the orbiting side of the satellite. So there's not just one, there's many. And in that network infrastructure, you can do things that we would traditionally probably not think of doing or see before. I mean, one thing that we can do today is if you have a group of people in your house that are all watching Netflix and you feel that, let's say maybe it's a larger circumstance, let's say there's a hostel of, you know, 150 kids and all of them could be watching Netflix, and there's a high likelihood that the same show will be watched by different people at different times. So you set up like a little data cache that basically once someone watches a show on Netflix, it's saved offline, so to speak. And when someone else later on wants to watch it, it's served to them. And if you can do that via Starlink satellites, you can reduce broadband use quite a lot.
Mm.
And for gamers, it's also quite useful because gamers are always fighting latency. They want to try and strive to get the best possible latency that they can.
Mm.
And if you're talking about Starlink satellites having very good low bandwidth connectivity, if it's fast, then effectively, you know, you could have a person in Africa, a person in Europe, a person in USA that are all gaming at the same time connected to one network. And that's efficiency, you know, we're talking efficiency, saving the milliseconds that you can, and they go a long way and make a big difference. So I've even heard whispers that the first service that'll be available from the Starlink satellites are only 10 megs a second. So I don't know if that's the case here, but there was definitely word of that was the first speed that you would get, which still beats our ADSL first.
Yeah, but that's not very fast.
It's not. It's not when you're talking about fiber that can reach 200 megs a second.
Sure.
But I think the scalability of the infrastructure is significant, where you can go to maybe a gig a second in 5-10 years, or, you know, depending on how quick they erect the infrastructure.
Now, Kane, you just mentioned satellites, and that brings us to our next discussion for this show for today, and that of course is DStv. DStv, Netflix can kill DStv, warns MultiChoice. That was a story published earlier this week on My Broadband, and MultiChoice actually admitted in their presentation to ICASA, that's the Independent Communications Authority of South Africa, they regulate radio, TV, all the spectrums, and they actually admitted that over-the-top or OTT providers like Netflix, YouTube, Disney Plus, HBO, and also, this is a new one, Peacock, pose an existential competitive threat to its DStv offering. Peacock, is that you?
I would wish.
I must be honest, I've never heard of Peacock. It must be a new streaming service.
I think so. And here's the interesting thing. We worked with a company a while back by the name of Alpha Networks, and they were actually trying to break into this industry, which is cable-orientated. The cable-orientated industry, which is cable TV. And it's when I learned about it, I was dumbstruck at how little you can actually get from it. For example, Netflix isn't a good example, but someone who's having a series on YouTube, for example, can understand, you know, view duration, they can understand concurrent viewers, they can understand geographics, they can understand demographics such as age and gender and interests, and they can determine a lot more about the person watching and how long they watched for and things like that. Whereas cable companies, it's just they can kind of tell what channel your decoder switched to. And I don't know about you, but I sometimes leave my TV on weird channels. Like, it can be on news, it doesn't mean I'm watching it the whole time.
So
it's very inaccurate, and I'm surprised. I don't know how they're gonna hold on, how they're gonna clutch it.
Now the question I have for you, Kane, is do you have DStv?
I haven't had it in about a year or two, to be honest.
And your friends and family, when last did you see somebody with a dish? Okay, the dishes are still up. Let me ask you, when last did you see somebody with a decoder that's still working and they're watching from that decoder?
I know that my mom and them in their house, they have DSTV and they watch it. And also any time that we're dealing with any kind of property rental, the DSTV, those units always have DSTV on. But for my own personal use, you're talking, you know, south of like 7 to 9 Netflix subscriptions just to get DSTV.
Yeah, exactly, man. It's too expensive. The big thing I'm seeing right now, and I mean, we obviously did a lot of research into streaming media here, especially here in South Africa, you know, before we launched eRadio. And the main thing is people are swapping those dishes for streaming services, you know. And that's why DSTV also released these new options that you can stream DSTV on your TV. Your decoder's got internet accessibility, whether it's through the modem that they sold separately. That was the USB modem. Or you can just plug your router in with one of those normal internet cables. But basically, they know that you should be online. And that's why Netflix is built into their new new decoder.
That's interesting. And, you know, Jeff Bezos once said that if you have a goal for what you want your business to do, and for DSTV, that goal would be to provide entertainment, you know, to viewers, for a subscription-based service, your goal has to be flexible in the 21st century. And if you look at someone like Musica, who just kind of peddled away at trying to get away with keeping very physical, It doesn't work. You have to evolve with the times. Whether you're a big business or a small business, you can't try and sell old tech. It doesn't work. Many have tried. You know, eBay's got that sorted. You know, you can't do anything with that kind of stuff. So if DSTV doesn't evolve, they will eventually die, because there's even so little control with cable. I mean, if you think about it, you need a PVR decoder, which is just a hard drive in a box, essentially, to record for you if you want to pause or rewind or do anything that is coherently easy to do on a streaming service.
Yeah,
it's evolved with that right now.
The only difference is it's coming through satellite and not streaming. But now, as I said, they're offering you these streaming options. You can actually buy their bouquets, their packages, and just use them as a streaming service. Watch them on your laptop or even on your smart TV by downloading the DSTV app, which is available in all the app stores.
So I would assume that anything that they stream, that anything that they provide a viewer with the ability to watch on cable, they have viewable on their online streaming service.
Exactly, yeah. And, you know, the main thing, I think, you know, they're obviously trying to evolve, as you said, by incorporating Netflix into their decoders now, or PVRs, you know, because they know that if you can't beat them, join them. So they're saying, okay, no, we can't beat Netflix, there's no way. In terms of content, content licensing, and also the price. So let's just build them into our decoder and give people kind of, like, we'll be the main attraction and we'll be home to all these services. I think you can add Amazon as well into your decoder along with Netflix, but they still want you to have DSTV. They just want to make it a one-stop shop, basically, you see. But I'm skeptical about it. I mean, because what is that going to change with regards to their content? Because let's face it, ultimately DSTV will be killed by its repeats.
Yeah, and luckily on the streaming side of things, I don't think you experience those repeats. But where the problem, I think, for me really comes in is in usability. For everything that Netflix has to buy in terms of licensing, so would DSTV. And everything Showmax has to buy, so would DSTV. unless they partner and then they can provide each other's content. But then you have Amazon Prime, who would also have to do a partnership.
So
the user has to decide, sure, how many subscriptions do I want to actually be able to watch TV? It's an industry, I think, which is going to adapt very quickly. And it's not, I think in 3 years, 4 years from now, we're going to be looking at the same kind of setup.
Yeah.
Because we can't. If no one can afford to pay 5 subscriptions for TV service,
this
doesn't work.
Not even a couch potato watches that much TV, I'm telling you. But very, very interesting, Kane. It's going to be interesting. I mean, you right now, you know, we recently viewed a lot of properties as well. And when you get to the places, you know, sometimes they're still occupied. And you see a DStv dish outside. But inside, the owners have switched to, you know, media boxes, smart TVs, the streaming options, of course. The dish is still on the roof, only for the reason of them not removing it yet. But they will remove it eventually, exactly. Like we removed our old TV aerials. Remember the old TV aerials looked like a braai grid on your roof. Those are taken down slowly but surely.
Some of them still there.
Some of them are still there. Yes, I've seen that. That's quite interesting because they're completely useless now unless you want to braai on them.
Completely useless. You can use it as a clothing rack.
And that's going to be the case with the DStv dishes. People will use them to fry sausages.
Have you ever had a DStv dish wok, you know?
Well, now you will have one. It's so, so interesting. But yeah, it's going to be interesting to see what's going to happen over the next couple of days or weeks or months. You know, that we could see some big changes. But right now, I think the only thing that's keeping people on DStv is the sport, because they've got like monopoly when it comes to sport licensing and broadcasting sport on Super Sport. But if people find alternatives, and I know for a fact you do get alternatives, if they find it and it is accessible, it's going to be bye-bye.
Yeah, absolutely. You got to fear the alternative. And in actuality, speaking of alternatives, and we just touched on Elon Musk, speaking of an alternative to you know, Volkswagen and all of that, we're talking Tesla. They just bought $1.5 billion worth of Bitcoin as part of their, you know, they announced them for their, they released the announcement in their annual report, which is insane.
That's a lot of Bitcoin, eh, Kane?
It's a lot of Bitcoin, eh? And it's the only other time we've heard about a company, a big purchase of Bitcoin such as this, was by a software developing company called MicroStrategy Incorporated. And they bought about $425 million worth of Bitcoin. And the reason Elon Musk says that the company has done it, Tesla decided to do it, is number one, their investors, or at least the board, has decided that they're going to restructure some of their investment mechanisms. And also they're considering, or they foresee Tesla's being purchasable with Bitcoin in the near future. And Elon Musk being Elon Musk, as soon as he recently put on his status, he said hashtag Bitcoin. And then like a week or so later, this announcement came through. And yeah, he's just made Bitcoin go above all-time high again, which is the second time in 2021 that we've broken our all-time high for Bitcoin. So it's almost at $50,000 now, which is about 800,000 rand.
Oh my word, 800,000 rand. Hectic. Kane, my computer wants to update.
Just wait until it's a lot more. Just wait.
Yo. No, I'll wait. My computer wants to update, so we got to have a music break right now. Windows wants to update, okay?
Okay, let's do it.
Get the eRadio SA app right now for free on the Google Play Store. Entertainment radio on the go.
And we're back on Tech Thursday right here on eRadio. Hope you enjoyed the music. We just had to do a Windows update. So bloody annoying, these Windows updates, eh, Kane? Don't you love them?
And it's that traditional sound. And, you know, talking about annoying tech sounds, that was one of them. The Windows 98 restart, you know, the tone. Do you remember that?
Yes, I do. When it shuts down and also when it comes back on. But as we said last week, one of them is the internet dial-up tone. In the 90s, was it the 90s, late 90s, when you got those MWeb dial-up boxes and you couldn't use the phone because the internet completely occupied it. And then you had this dial-up tone and it was screaming. It was this high-pitched scream right through your house just to open one bloody email. And then
do you remember the rotary phone as well? Imagine if today's youth had to use the rotary phone every single time they sent a text message. It would be like...
Yes.
It would be non-stop. You would walk in the bus and that's all you would hear. It just sounds like 1,000 people trying to use a typewriter.
No, that would be awful. But those phones were so cool. I actually used it once. We still had one when I was extremely small, what was it, 3, 4, maybe 5. I remember that phone really well. But that
some
was
people just...
Some
just keep it as antiques now.
Yeah, but it was nice. But you couldn't dial someone really quickly.
Oh, yeah, no. I didn't even know how to operate them when I was a child. Someone was trying to show me how to use it. I pushed the opt-out button.
Yeah. It's just so much easier when you're using buttons, isn't it?
Speaking of making things easier, TikTok users will soon be able to buy goods in the app. So have you ever seen those traditional TV shopping channel ads, where they're like, call this number to buy now?
Are you talking about Verimark infomercials?
Oh, yeah. Do you remember those Verimark infomercials? Those were hilarious, actually.
But wait, there's more.
There's more.
Isabel Jones. I remember it so well.
For
you have no
only
idea.
This amount, I remember those. And did you know that that type of shopping is extremely popular in China? In fact, that they have a day of the year where they make the most money. Shops and stuff make the most money via these traditional TV shopping channels, and they make huge sales. So what TikTok is doing, and it naturally being a Chinese type of app, is they're actually integrating this sort of environment or this type of functionality into their application. So if, for example, you're watching an influencer, you can buy a product that they advertise right while you're watching them, and they're going to get commission, or you're going to get a company that displays entire catalogs, and you can purchase things off of it while there's a live kind of infomercial style video playing. I think it'll be quite cool. I think it's really trendy. I would actually like to buy things like that if we're talking, imagine a 70% off sale, and this thing is going only 50 units for each thing, but it's dirt cheap. I mean, I'm going to be in there. I'm going to be buying. I'm going to be having fun with it,
Yeah.
And TikTok is a bit like that.
It is, actually, yeah. You can do anything on there anyway. And with the influencers, what they say goes.
Absolutely. And they're already people who are selling things on TikTok. They're marketing products on it.
Sure.
They're selling it.
I'm not surprised, eh? I'm not surprised.
60-second ads.
Oh, okay, well, that's fair enough. Getting back to South Africa quickly, Telkom has released a market update, and there's a big decline in fixed broadband subscribers. The company revealed that there was a massive decrease. It declined from 738,840 people at the end of 2019 to, that was the 31st of December. A year later, on the 31st of December 2020, they had 617,047 customers left on their broadband, so using ADSL. But I know that that's they're kind of doing away with those lines now in the areas where it's possible. If there's fiber, basically they closing down the, what do you call it, the exchange,
the ADSL exchanges. Very interesting.
Yes, because of the fiber, so they're no longer necessary, so you're kind of forced to move over to fiber, but that's only in the areas where they have it. I mean, here in the Garden Route in Sedgefield, they don't have fiber yet, you know, in the residential areas. So those people are still using ADSL. And it is actually quite nice. I spoke to somebody who's still using it, and he said to me, the nice thing is it's not so congested anymore because a lot of people are using alternatives. So now they've got the ADSL network to themselves in terms of bandwidth.
And those ADSL connections were always terrible. So the people that still have them, as everybody's kind of phasing off of them, are going to actually have the best service.
Yeah.
Until they discontinue.
Until they just crumble, because those lines apparently are really, really screwed. Like, you know, erosion and all that kind of stuff that's happening to it. And, you know, another really nice tech story from South Africa is, we all know the app. I'm sure you've got it on your phone right now, Kane. Eskom Sapush.
I have it. Yeah, I know I have it, and I installed it about a year ago, I think.
Yes, you got to be so careful when you say that name and you're Afrikaans like me. Really, I've several times I almost said something differently. The popular load shedding app now has, they reached 2.2 million users. Can you believe it? It kind of boosted recently by the multiple bouts of load shedding, like we had this week already, you know, a lot of people downloading it. 2.2 million users. You know, the app is free of charge, and it was launched back in 2015, 6 years ago, by creators Dan Wells and Herman Maritz. These guys just decided, listen, there's a tool needed to inform people. And I really respect them for basically sitting there, drawing up the schedules provided by municipalities so that we know when the power will go off.
Yeah, there's definitely some manual labor going on there, eh?
Absolutely. Apparently, my broadband asked Maritz how they managed to keep the schedules up to date, particularly with regards to how municipalities in Eskom have abruptly changed these in recent weeks. And he said, we rely on users reporting issues with the schedule and then us sourcing them on the municipality websites. Now listen to this. This is hard work. Dan then spends a lot of time mapping them manually to Google Sheets and then loading them into the system. That must be a lot of work.
Yeah, absolutely a lot of work. They've definitely narrowed down that process, I think, over the last few years to something that's more manageable. But I think it is very strenuous. I'd take my hats off to them.
Absolutely.
I use that app.
Yeah, same here. And, you know, they actually didn't make any money. I don't think they're actually making any money right now. They've got like a small Google ad, I think, appearing on the app. And that just kind of pays for the servers. Because can you imagine 2.2 million users on a server?
Yeah, I can imagine it's quite heavy. But I mean, did they specifically say they don't make any profit from it?
Yeah, I read in an interview. Well, that was not a recent interview, but they said, you know, they didn't make any money off it. And then later on, they just added a Google ad on it just to cover the costs of the servers. But I don't know if at that stage they made any money. Maybe right now they are. And I hope so. For their part, because this is a lot of work. You know, apparently it was a side job as well, so they had other jobs. I don't know where you find the time to put in all this information to tell everybody, you know. But I like that they've got they're using the users' feedback as well, you know, and getting people to tell them what's happening, if the schedules are right or not.
I always feel like those reporter fault prompts are just falling on deaf ears. But I think when you hear about it actually being taken into consideration, oh, that's amazing, because there's so many apps out there that allow you just to log a fault or support or request a support query, and it just, nothing ever happens. It's just a dark alleyway of progress.
Yeah, with this specific app, I've noticed that it says when you say log a fault, or it says something else, I think, not correct, reported here or something, it actually opens your email program on your phone with the email address already typed in, and you can just start typing. It kind of gives you a template, and you just have to modify it. That's so nice, because you just edit it and then you send it off.
Yeah, that's very useful. I will agree. That is very useful.
Now, Kane, you've got a story on Facebook removing false vaccine claims. That's also part of their kind of, like, I don't know if I should call it censorship program.
Yeah, it's a very complex. I mean, they're I think even when they're doing it themselves, they know that they're playing a very fine line between, you know, causing public outcry and trying to actually do a justice, because what they're saying is they're going to remove false vaccine claims. So anything that claims the vaccines are ineffective or unsafe will be deleted by Facebook. And, you know, it is very hard to say, because some people are entitled to their own opinion. And, you know, there are these people that are very anti-vaccine, and I think they would, in a sense, feel very, you know, silenced in a way. We all have the right to make our own decision, and I think we all have the right to voice our own opinion. But it's very complex, because the opinion that people are voicing might not be backed by, you know, a lot of pre-determined research and a proper evaluation of key data points to look at and things like that. It just creates this atmosphere that, you know, a lot of people might think Facebook is trying to do something bad, and maybe they are, but I think in a lot of ways what they're doing is good, because you don't want to deter people from making a decision that could change the fate of someone they hold dear or something.
So true.
Like that.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. I understand it. A lot of people see it as censorship, but I think, you know, all in all, you know, we all have our different beliefs, and there's so many conspiracy theories going around. I actually read up on the psychology behind it, and it said that people, you know, kind of go to conspiracy theories and believe it and all that stuff because it gives them a sense of control in a situation where otherwise they have no control over the information or their knowledge or the situation. And what it does is it kind of gives them, it kind of gives them something to believe in, to kind of justify what they're going through. Very interesting. That's just a little bit about the psychology behind conspiracy theories.
That is very interesting.
It's sort of, it gives them comfort. I think it's almost like a comfort to them to kind of believe that information and go with it instead of not knowing what's going on.
No, I agree with you. The head of health at Facebook said building trust and confidence in the vaccines is critical. So they're launching the largest worldwide campaign to help public health organizations share accurate information about COVID-19 vaccines and encourage people to get vaccinated as vaccines become available to them. So that's very interesting. The stance that they're taking, they're trying to create this campaign to create awareness. So I feel like as long as the information that they're sharing is backed up by case studies, I feel it's the right move. Facebook also said that it would give $120 million in advertising credits to health ministries, non-governmental organizations, and the United Nations agencies to aid in spreading reliable COVID-19 vaccine and preventative health information. So they're actually allocating quite a large budget towards advertising credits. And those advertising credits, you can kind of put them anywhere between $1 and $10 a click sometimes. So they could have anywhere between, you know, 12 million to, you know, 1 million to 12 million people who've actively learned more about vaccines and learned more about the vaccinations and things like that. I think it's very interesting.
Just the last story quickly is, apparently, also according to reports, the Xbox Series X is outselling the PlayStation 5 in South Africa, but the latter, the PlayStation 5, remains the most in-demand system of the next generation consoles.
Yo, that's interesting. So it's almost like people are buying Xboxes because PlayStations are in high demand. That's an interesting calculation.
Yeah. As always. And then also, if you want to go and check it out on the My Broadband website, they also have this article that they did over the past couple of days. They were invited to Eskom's Megawatt Park head office for an overview of how the utility manages the country's power system to prevent a national blackout. And you can actually see the inside of that center. It is quite interesting. It's like a data center. You've got all these screens around the people flashing red and showing graphs and all that kind of stuff. So if you're into that kind of stuff, you must definitely go to the My Broadband website and check that out. I really found that so interesting. I wonder if they...
I'm even going to check it out.
You must. I wonder if they also push the buttons over there to switch us off, you know, when we have load shedding.
Oh, that's the great debate, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, why would you go and physically switch the power feed off to a town? I'm sure it's all digital. Well, overseas it is. You know, we've seen those movies where they hack the power grids. Remember those movies? But those power grids are online. You can hack them. I'm sure you can.
You just see six oaks trying to turn one big lever. They're just all just trying to weigh it down.
No.
One big manual.
No,
switch.
I think it's all digital, man. I think it's just a little button. Like on the screen, this is the way I imagine it. They don't show you in the My Broadband article, that side of it. But I'm sure it's a button there. Or maybe it's just that, like a computer program, and then you see all these towns. Maybe it's like a map thing. It looks like a map. And then they zoom in on the town that should go off, and then they just go click, and then something happens, and the town goes off. Ideally, that would be how it works.
It's actually, I would love to watch a video about how they do that, because sometimes I don't know if you've ever experienced it, but sometimes it seems like they accidentally switch your power off, and then it comes back on like 3 or 4 minutes later. I've had that happen before.
Yes,
I've had, you know. Where it's supposed to come on at like 9 and it comes on at like 8:42 and you're like, why is it so early? Was the guy about to go to sleep and he just didn't think he was going to, you know?
Yeah.
Lost it? I don't know.
I think probably in that center they're seeing on the graphs, because those, I know for a fact in the article it says that those graphs are actually interactive with the power stations. They can see the temperature of all the equipment and all that kind of stuff in real time on their screens. So I'm pretty sure they can see, okay, we've got a little bit extra now, so let's switch that town on, because that town only uses that amount of electricity, and we've got that amount available now, so let's give them a, you know, an early night or whatever.
That's very interesting. Let's try and get them to explain it to us.
Yeah, man, I want to know. I'm so fascinated by stuff like that. You have no idea.
We can ask Carte Blanche. They would seem like someone who might.
Ooh,
do like
Derek, Watts. Derek, what's happening? How's it working? Please,
Derek,
please get in touch. Call me. Well, Kane, it was great catching up with you. I think we're all up to date now. How do you feel?
Yeah, no, absolutely. And thanks so much for having me. I think it's such a welcome experience coming on the show, because in a way I'm staying up to date as well as everyone else, and we can actually have like a good discussion about it.
Just lastly, how are your YouTube plans coming along? When are we seeing you back on the small screen?
Ooh, it's happening real soon, eh? We actually got videos that we're busy developing and things like that now. A bit of a series that's worth watching, which is going to be very interesting. I'll definitely recommend keeping an eye out for it. We're a bit behind our development schedule, but I mean, it's all good quality content. I'd be very excited.
I can't wait.
It's ready.
I can't wait. Do you want to end off by saying who sponsored this episode? I'm putting you on the spot.
Where would we be without our universal 24/7 USB rock? I mean, we wouldn't be anywhere without that. We're basically holding the whole studio together. It's the glue by which we, you know, we live by.
Oh man, you're so funny. Yes, sir, thank you. Big thanks to the USB pet rock for making this episode possible. The USB pet rock plugs into your computer, and guess what it does? Absolutely nothing.
Available right now, buy it.
Where?
Very good deal.
Where can we get it? Musica.
It's hard. It's almost sold out everywhere you go. It's very, very difficult.
Do you get it?
If you do find it, you
do. Damn. You get the pun there? It's hard.
You have to order it online. It's hard to get.
It's really hard.
Right over my head, that one.
It's really hard to get the pet rock. But yeah, it's quite interesting. So big thanks to the USB pet rock for making this episode possible. Kane, until next week.
That's so funny.
Look. Until next week, Thursday afternoon between 3 and 4 right here on eRadio. Hope you're going to have a super rest of your week and weekend.
You too, and thanks so much for having me. Cheers. Bye-bye.